I said this on the retreat that I taught at New Year's Eve. It's kind of, there's something kind of sweet about seeing everybody in their homes. You know, we get to see your libraries and your couches and your sometimes the odd dog going through, and you know, it's actually very intimate. It's extraordinary. And then I think, oh no, you're looking at my kitchen. Is it tidy? You know. But there's something about really connecting. It's not when you're all, you know, in a hall, you know, you're seeing the back of each other's heads. This way, you're seeing faces and then house plants and the choice pictures behind us. It's anyway, I feel it. It's that helps with connecting too. So yeah, connecting and disconnecting really is the theme of this retreat. And of course, I started thinking about this because I'm thinking, you know, what's going on for us all now? And it's been so many months now that we just haven't been able to connect the way we want to and we like to, and that's healthy and normal. And so, yes, this whole topic was up for me. So let's see where I'll go with this. To begin with, are you all okay to hear me now? You can see me and hear me okay? Right, good. Okay, awesome. Yeah. When we encounter any kind of challenge, that we're in this one, this peculiar one, which has built into it isolation to some degree, disconnection. But anyway, when we encounter any challenging scenario, internally or externally, or because of externally, internally, etc., what we tend to do, we sort of, by default, typically, unless we've got years and years of practice and it's very established in us, which over time does really change how we respond, is we tend to withdraw somehow or other into our own anxiety, our own irritation, our own frustration, worry, hurt, sometimes shame, and so on. We all know, all of our unwholesome states of mind. And the reason the Buddha called them not bad or just painful, but unwholesome, he used that word, meaning that when unwholesome states then arise, which of course are reactions to difficulty, unwholesome means they are the opposite of leading to freedom. Well, freedom, what the Buddha means by freedom, another word for freedom, if you like to think of it this way, is connection. Because when we are not free, we're imprisoned. And what we're imprisoned in is this separate sense of self, the sense of being an individual with some kind of membrane separating us from others and the world. And that's the small mind. And it's the survival mind and it's the animal mind. And we need one. And we need to take care of the fact that we are not the same as you. And I need to eat this food and you need that. And I live in this house and you live in that, and so on. Obviously, we all know. But we have made that reality, what that has become in our reality when we don't have spiritual dimension to life, our total reality, and we are separate. Then when we are in this kind of times, these COVID times, with enforced isolation to some greater extent than usual, that happens all the more. And so we're in our own little bubbles. We're using the word bubbles and we talk about membranes. And we can really struggle in there. What the Buddha is recommending in his entire teaching and all of the practices are freedom. It's towards freedom. It's a journey towards more freedom. And when he uses words like wholesome, kusala, the word wholesome is what leads to freedom. Freedom from being separated, freedom from the separate sense of self. Freedom from that small, tight, painful, struggling ego place. That is our birthright and that is our survival mechanism. But when it is alone and it doesn't have the big mind, the spiritual dimension, then it's very lonely and very painful. And so, of course, we practice and we all have different spiritual backgrounds and journeys, but the way the Buddha taught it is we bring in our spiritual awareness, spiritual strengths and skills to have experience as well as being separate and individual to be a participant of something beyond that, to participate in the largeness of life, in the magnificence of the truth of it that's not just the individual story. And of course, when we're triggered with that individuality you know, is enhanced and gets bigger. And one of the things that we do, well, several of the things that we do, and which you all know, so I'm just reminding us, when we are in our membrane of separation, when we're in the influence of believing our separateness, identified with being separate, it's not easy in there. It's not pleasant in there. When that's happening and we're feeling very much that sense of me and mine, it's busy. And inside, we're busy thinking. We're often making comments. We're telling stories. We're sometimes, you know, writing whole biographies, you know, autobiographies and with comments about what's going on. And it's noisy in there. It's busy. It's churning. Other things we do when we are triggered by difficulty and the sense of self manifests is we go into fear, worry, and that gets busy because the mind is worrying about this and that and the other and trying to figure things out. We can shut down sometimes. We can repress what we're really feeling or what's really going on with other people. And, you know, like I was raised to be completely superficial. Everything's fine. How are you, Mrs. Jones? It's a lovely day. When really you're actually in the midst of some great family drama and crisis that no one's going to talk about. That the sort of shutting down of what's really going on is one of the things that can happen when we're triggered or upset. Of course, we can blame, and we do sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. We talk about badly other people. All these things, when you think about them, these behaviors which we engage with, which happen to us almost, we don't mean to do it, are isolating, they're separating. To judge, to criticize, to comment about isn't to be with. It isn't loving. It's in some way trying to, it's the little mind trying to protect the little separate sense of self. And we need to do it to some degree. Anyone with any psychological training understands what I'm saying. But there's a separating going on. We're armored to some degree. We're in our little membrane. We get closed off. It's not a coincidence that when the Buddha was teaching meditation, he taught somewhere in the earliest beginnings of teaching, he taught there were three pillars or three legs to the stool of meditation, of a spiritual life, of the journey to freedom. One is meditating, but the other two are dana and sila. A lot of you have known this and have heard it zillions of times. But dana, for those who are not quite so familiar with the teachings, the language is the Pali language that the teachings are recorded in. Dana is translated as generosity, giving. And sila is translated in different terms, but basically it means behaving socially in an ethical way, in your integrity. Well, both those things as practices, he says you can't actually meditate without the other two, but a spiritual life is founded on all three: inner contemplation and meditation and mind training, a sense of integrity in the way we behave among each other socially, honorably, ethically, and being kind and thoughtful, because those last two things are about other. They're about connection. They, even just thinking about being generous in some way, immediately the membrane that separates me is thinner, because now there's something beyond the membrane that I'm thinking about. And the same for all of the ethics, you know, moral behaviors. When we're careful, we don't cheat and steal and exploit, we're considering other. And so the direction is expanding from that membrane that keeps us separate. The journey to freedom is that, it's the dissolving of that. And when we have moments of being really free from feeling separate, there is no membrane. Those lovely moments that we've all had, and we have actually frequently in those times, it's when self-consciousness is not up. When busyness to try and protect myself, moi, isn't being busy. There's nothing I need to do. Everything's just as it is. That self-centered need and busyness is not happening in that moment. That's the Buddha's description of freedom. And those moments grow the more we practice. Of course, what we're doing, as you know, is we're practicing as we realize how we make those moments stronger, the separated moments, and what creates them, what creates the boundaries, and what dissolves the boundaries. How the membrane gets thinner at different times and thicker at other times. When we're critical, it's really thick. When we're embarrassed or ashamed or angry, it's really strong, to the point of not just being a membrane, but being armor. So if, in a way, you can say it is fear separates us and love connects us. Love is a spiritual terms of love is when there isn't that membrane. It's when we are interconnected with each other. It isn't just liking and enjoying and getting excited about like romantic love. It's like being with, being part of, connecting with. And so it's useful, and I've been thinking of this a lot and speaking about this quite a lot recently, is to hold in, I've been making this explicit, it's been there all along, but I'm making it really explicit these days, and the way the Buddha taught it is that there are two views of reality. Even some people say two realities, the relative reality and the ultimate reality. And so they're really views, they're perspectives. There's the perspective of the regular relative reality where I'm separate from you and my name is this and my shoe size is 8, etc. And then there's the ultimate reality, which is where we're all one thing, where we're living love, you know, where there's just energy throbbing through us all, the connected. Two realities and actually two views. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's not that the ultimate is, it's even not a good word, because ultimate, we think, oh, well, ultimately I'll be just in the ultimate view and I won't have the relative view. And that's not true. Both are absolutely essential in the way we live our lives, human beings. But we want them both to be accessible and experienced. Only when both are available in our psyches, in our consciousness, can we actually function in a healthy way. We need a healthy sense of being individual that's not unhealthy and needy and miserable and desperate and frantic, but we need to have a healthy access to being beyond just being separate. When we have conscious moments of being free from being individuals, we can be individuals without being so serious about it. I love that. Joseph Goldstein said this, I read this years ago. When we are able to be conscious about the ultimate experience, those moments when we're all one in whatever ways, we can play in both those realms. But when we've no experience of the beyondness and we're sort of locked into just the separate, it's no playing at all. It's very serious. It's in fact grim. You know, I take myself very seriously and I might be trying to be a really good person, but there's a lot of ego invested in it, a lot of selfing. So we want to be able to have access to both these. So now I'm going to go back to our situation right now. So the challenge of these days that we're in, and they keep on going, you know, and it's going to keep on going still for some time. It's not about to be over, even though February is almost coming. Kind of think of spring in this part of the world as, okay, I've got daffodils, you know, shooting up now, coming along, you know, a few little things flowering. But no, actually, we're not going to be back to normal, as we are realizing. So when the challenge is sufficiently great, automatically we connect. You know, when there's something, some dreadful thing happens in the neighborhood, you know, or when there's an earthquake, or we call them acts of God, something that affects everybody really, really a lot, profoundly. We forget the individual stories. They're not so important because now we're all trying to find shelter because our houses have knocked down, or there's been a forest fire through the area, or there's some great big thing. And so we're all there, reduced to the same humanity, if you like, helping each other. We find ourselves really connecting when we're in the sort of big times of trouble. Suddenly we're all in it together. Then when everything gets okay and we sort of figure it all out and get back to normal, we get back to being petty and separate again and selfish. It's one of the sad things, I think, when we've had moments of really being with each other and then we start criticizing each other again. It happens in societies over and over. It's peculiar. But typically, when we are challenged, as we are these days, we retract, we shrink back. And then sometimes, for those of us who have some access to these skills, we have to dig deep into our Dharma bank accounts to help us. And it makes us, and we do. And we find that we actually can. And I find that really an encouraging thing. It's like, sometimes we don't really think about, some of us, there'll be times we don't think about being meditators much. And then as soon as we're faced with some challenging thing, we start breathing, we find our feet on the ground, we do what we can to relax our shoulders, we start using our skills because we have to. That's one of the things that actually can happen. But we can really deliberately, I think, focus on some of them and get better at them so that they're more available when times are difficult. And now I think one of the things we need to be conscious, I think always, but now it's pretty relevant, is ways to connect, ways that we belong. And along with that, of course, when you think about it, you're also going to think about ways we're not connected. And in what kinds of relationships and circles do we disconnect? And there are some that we connect well with and some that we don't, some that we easily disconnect. There's all kinds. And this is more a contemplation. I'm wanting, these are thoughts I've had and reflections I've had about this topic than a teaching exactly. I'm asking you to consider along with me where ways that you connect. And there's a little, I used this morning when we were sitting, I used the phrase circle. And I also used the word web a few times. I had my experience where I thought of web, I never thought of being in a web, was 20 something years ago. Now I had a really, really severe car crash. Some of you know about it. And it was severe. You know, it took me, it was almost a year before I was free of a walking stick. You know, I couldn't walk to begin with. And then I was on crutches for months and so on, broke my pelvis and so on. Anyhow, when it happened, for those first two or three or four weeks, I kept getting messages from people in the community. I mean, I lived here already for a long time. I lived here 20 odd years by the time it happened. I got so many messages of love from people when they heard about it. When my partner or somebody would go shopping, they'd come, or a visitor would come, and they'd bring all these messages of love and care and well-wishing. And the feeling I had was that I had fallen off a cliff. And I had landed in a lot of arms, and they had made this great big web, and I had not crashed. I mean, I had crashed, but I was also held. And it was an amazing feeling to know that when necessary, there were all these arms reaching out to help me, hold me. It was profound. Until you have something like that, you don't really realize what's there. And that we're all in all different kinds of webs like that. We belong in all kinds of circles. So I it was such a physical experience of literally as though I was landing in a hammock, you know, rather than landing on the ground by myself. I really felt that sense, sort of springy, like fabric. So I want us to consider now, sort of I'm asking you to consider for yourself, what kind of webs or circles or relationships, whatever word you want to use, are you held in? Which also means, are you holding? Because we aren't just passively lying in the, you know, in the middle of it. We're part of it. We are holding and being held at the same time. And sometimes we aren't holding, or we're letting go. We're being let go of, or we're letting go of that connecting. So sometimes we're connected and connecting, and sometimes we're disconnected, disconnecting. We're active and passive in both of it. So what kind of circles or relationships are you holding and are holding you? And which ones are there gaps in or breaks in? And I'm going to name tons of them because there's way more than I can think of here. But and this isn't in any order of preference, by the way. These are just things that came to me. But for some of us, family. I'm saying family at the top of mind because today I had my little grandson, who's part of my bubble. He's just turned 3. And so his grandpa, my ex, just took him from me so I could talk to you. And tomorrow I will go to his family, which is my son, his wife, and him because a sister, my son's sister, my stepdaughter, is having a birthday. So we're having a little family and we're all in this bubble. And so that's why it's first on my list. I have this circle, a particular web. I'm very blessed. Some of us have webs like that, but we can't actually touch across the miles because of not being able to travel. So there's that. It's not just that we're disconnecting because we're turning our back on, but they're too far away. They're there in our hearts, but not in our physical experience, maybe. Friends, of course. The web of friends. I have a web, I'm telling you this just as examples, particular web of, there's a group of seven of us, the group of seven. We've been friends for 40 years, and we meet every couple of weeks at a bonfire, somebody's bonfire, so we can, you know. What about neighborhoods? Are you in a web of a neighborhood? Do you have a neighborly neighborhood? Some places there's much more than others. Some people live in buildings full of apartments and they're not in their neighborhood. I saw once a little video clip of, and there were no words spoken. It was a couple of people going into an apartment building in an elevator and not talking to each other and leaving and going down the hall, the cameras in the hallway, into their respective apartments. And then some moments later, one of them came back out with a dining table with somebody on the other end, and then they laid the table. And then the first one, somebody's nodding, Cheryl, you saw that one too, maybe. And then the other one came back out, put food on, and eventually everyone in the corridor, 20 apartments or 10 or something, were sitting at this table, and the little kid goes down to the end and knocks on the door, pulls out the old man from the end and makes him come and join them. Such a sweet little 2-minute thing about community. Do you have connection like that with people around you? Are you isolated in your little apartment? How does that feel? There are all kinds of things, like we have professional circles and we have clubs, you know, friendship groups in different kinds of ways like that. And there's bigger issues where we disconnect. Race, for instance, class. I was raised very much in the class system in England. It was so disconnected. You know, like we were definitely not them and we really wanted to be them and we had to prove we were this and we had to do all these various behaviors and speak in certain ways in order to be some. It's unbelievable. I'm sure a lot of you can relate. Talk about separations. Talk about membranes, judgments. And then things that happened where those just disappear. I was in a private school education, boarding school, English private middle school, very much in our own little world. And then I spent 2 years in a public college, in a general community college, and I was completely in shock. It took me a year and a half to just be able to function again while hanging out with people from completely different backgrounds, because I had been taught to be so separate. And it was really fun, I have to say. And I was a teenager, you can imagine, but that actually, yeah. I'm not going to go on and on about myself too much here. What about your connection with your body? How is that? How connected are you? Some much more than others. Sometimes some of us much more than other times. Do we disconnect? Do we take that body for granted? You know, do we treat that body badly? Do we take care of it? Do we honor it? Do we tune into it? Become familiar and intimate or not? What about the heart? Again, that's easy sometimes, and for some people, and for sometimes people don't know what we mean by feelings. And some people never raise with the word. What is that? Or we're scared to go there, to connect. One of the things about our journeys as we grow in our spiritual lives is we become more familiar with our authenticity. What's really going on in here? How I'm really feeling? We're better able, largely because we gain the skills of not adding layers of reactivity on top of whatever is in here as we encounter it. We need help to not get triggered by shame, you know, or fear or hurt, wounds when they come up. We can get into, oh no, really triggered. And so as we practice and we learn how to be able to just be with just this moment without needing to add stories and comments and extra reactions, we discover we can. We have the capacity to feel whatever we're feeling. It becomes manageable. It becomes sweet, poignant, interesting, often very revealing and often helpful. But that's not always accessible. So our emotions, our hearts, our vulnerabilities, we don't connect with sometimes. How are yours? How are you doing? Another one is our roots, our ancestry. We're often, especially in North America, you know, massive millions of immigrants disconnected from our traditions. And sometimes traditions are really helpful in reconnecting or in reconnecting with meaning. Often rites and rituals what connect us with meaning, not just words. Traditions. What traditions are you connecting with or disconnected with, or do you have which nourish you? I mean, that's another question about being connected. It's nourishing when we connect. And the disconnection, sad, seems to me. I mean, how about, I've written in character letters, just ourselves. How are we really with ourselves? When we're challenged, we tend to be all about out there and this is like this and I agree with or don't agree with this particular bunch of people, and a friend sends me a message and then I discover that actually that's part of that whole conspiracy world, and then, you know, we, that kind of shaking us up and having us doubt what's really true for ourselves. One of the things about this journey for me is, it's like, what is true for me? I don't know everything that's going on. Certainly don't know what's going to happen. The various policies and politics and stories and positions people take. There's no way of knowing the truth of all it is. But can I explore what's true for me? I've been trying to turn the word truth from a noun into a verb, as though there is the truth, which I need to know, or I'm wanting to find out what is the truth of this. What's the truth behind these vaccines? Are they really safe? You know, what's the truth? As though there's something solid there. If I can turn truth into truing, it more becomes a sort of dynamic. What's true for me? What's my level of trust here? What's the dynamic relationship I have with the decision of that when it comes to my turn to have a decision? Can I connect with what's my own experience, my own wholesomeness? Your spirit life, the life of your spirit, your inner life, how connected are you with that? A day like this brings it a little more to the fore, which is why we're doing it. We can get quite mundane. I have a feeling that a lot of people have developed a lot more of an inner life because we haven't had so much of an outside life. We've had to be reflective, haven't we? What other webs of connection? In thinking about this, I'm very connected to the fact that I'm a gardener. And there's thousands and thousands of plants out there. I've got a large one and I have grown it for 27 years or something. And I've put in thousands of plants. I mean, I've got shrubs and perennials and, you know, all kinds of borders, and not just the leeks are down there and the kale and the carrots are still in there, but all of it. And I'm in a relationship with those things. There's no question. I go out there and I talk to them, and how are they doing? And I take care of them and move them around and prune them and feed them. I've got two large loads of horse poop recently arrived, and it's a relationship I have. Many of us have, even just our house plants, we have relationships with them, that we connect. The natural world, we go out there, some of us with our binoculars, birds will do it, you know. We have different interests in different parts of the natural world. I have this little grandson, as I've said. One of the things we like doing when the tide is out is lifting up rocks and connecting with the crabs. go scuttling away. Like when you see it through a little, you know, two-year-old's eyes, it's like the wonder of it all. We don't, in our busy ego worlds, we don't care about the crabs and we don't care about the plants in the garden. When we can be reflective, we can be more open and we discover wonder. Those of you who've done meditation retreats intensively know perfectly well, and I've seen this so many times and experienced this myself so many times, that with the absence of the stimulus of the computer screen and all of the busyness of life and city life and jobs and everything, and you can go wandering out in nature with a quiet mind, it's wonderful. And the little simplest spider webs and melting frost on, you know, the tips of the branches, the sparkling of the stars at night, it's wonderful. That's because we're open. It's our, the armor is melting. The armor from the ego doesn't need to do it when you're in a retreat. You can just become calm and you discover the beauty of this world. I talked about beauty this morning, connecting with it all. So with people, I've got some, not just people, I've got some stories, but one of the things about people, we can easily become isolated from people or disconnected from other people, other beings. So I want to talk about some of the ways to connect with human people. There's a story, there's lots, a book of stories, several books of stories written by a woman called Rachel Naomi Remen. Anybody know that name? Beautiful American woman, older now, doctor of psychiatry, I believe. Anyway, she's got a book called Tales My Grandfather Told Me, just lovely gems of wisdom. But one that she tells about her own upbringing, which is amazing to me, is she was an only child and her dad was a doctor. And about once a week, she would say that her dad would come home and in the evening meal, he would say, "You'll never guess who I had lunch with today." This is as she's growing up. This is his way of teaching her. And then he'd recount some, he had taken somebody he'd seen on the street, a street person, to lunch and had lunch with them for 40 minutes and listened to them and fed them. And that's what he did. He wasn't giving them money, but he actually listened to them while he had lunch with them. And then he'd come home and he'd tell her, "You'll never guess who I had lunch with today." And then he'll tell her the story of their life and why they're there. And what's it like for them to be there? And so she would understand the way they had fallen through their webs of life and landed on the street. And to understand how life is this unfolding and, you know, the results of our choices. I just think to understand is how to connect with people. He connected with them. He didn't walk past them and drop a penny in their hat. He actually had lunch and listened. And that was so struck me when I heard that. What a lovely way. All that's all we all really want is to be listened to and be seen. And then I've got a story here, which I've got to get. I've got it on my screen. I have to move you so I can find it. It's right behind where you are. Here it is. It's written by a woman called another Naomi Shaib Nye, Palestinian, beautiful writer. Again, some of you know her. So I'm going to paraphrase this because it's a bit long, but it's a beautiful story. And it, she calls it Wandering Around Albuquerque Airport Terminal. So she was at the airport and waiting at her gate. Oh, no, she wasn't at her gate, but she was waiting in the airport. And then an announcement came over the loudspeaker that this her, the people on her flight. No, wait a second, sorry. Oh, yeah. She learned that her flight was detained for 4 hours. But then there was an announcement. If anybody's in the vicinity of gate 4A and understands Arabic, could they come to the gate immediately? Well, she says one pauses these days. But anyway, gate 4A was my gate, so I went there. And she encounters this older woman who is a Palestinian woman in traditional Palestinian dress on the ground wailing. And they don't know what to do with her at the gate. Well, she can speak Arabic. She's Palestinian. So she speaks with her. And she explains. The woman thought that the flight was canceled. And she actually needed to go on this flight to get medical treatment. She has an appointment in a hospital. And she thought she wasn't going to be able to get there. And she's freaked out. And so this woman, this Naomi Shaib Nye, speaks to her and explains it's okay. it's okay. It's just a delay for 4 hours. And it finds out that she has her nephew is going to meet her. So they phone him up and explain, and she feels better. And then this, it's so sweet. She said, who's picking you up? We talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. It was her son. And then we called my dad, and they spoke for a little while in Arabic. And of course, they've discovered they had 10 friends in common. And she was laughing a lot by then. She had been crying, right? And so then by now she'd pulled out some of her homemade cookies, little powdered sugar, crumbly mounds of stuffed with dates and nuts out of her bag. And she was offering them to all the women at the gate. And then they get some beverages because they've all got to sit there for 4 hours. And then she says, I noticed that my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, she had a potted plant poking out of her bag. It's an old country thing, not only to travel with something growing, something alive, something that will stay rooted somewhere. As I looked around at that gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not one single person in this gate, once the crying of confusion had stopped, seemed apprehensive about any other person. They all took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. Such a sweet story. Cookies and empathy and somebody being freaked out. But the way this sweet woman is just offering cookies to everybody, and now you're all connected. It's so simple. And it would be so easy to be disconnected and just like, oh, you know, somebody's freaking out. And we can put people out of our hearts so easily. What else do I want to say? Okay, so one of the ways, come back to my notes here, and I've got to find you, so I don't want to lose you. There you are, computer screens, is to deliberately pay attention to what we have in common. It sounds so simple. It is so simple. What the ego does, it's very good at noticing what's different. My hair looks so white on the screen. Your hair looks blonde. My hair used to look blonde. They're different. We do this all the time. We're brilliant at it. It's survival. The mind is so specific about detail and difference. But behind all of that, hair is hair. You know, some of it's curlier, some of it's shorter, but it's all the same stuff. We look for the differences typically. Let's look for samenesses. It takes a little deliberateness, but it's amazing. There's so much we have in common. Why the acts of God unite us all is because we have all in common that we just suffered an earthquake or something. And so we're all in it together. And so suddenly we're noticing what we share. And the reason then we go back to being critical is we start noticing what we don't have in common. Let's stay aware of what we have in common, our common heritage, where we belong. The fact that we're all vulnerable. The fact that we're getting tired of being separated and in lockdown. And not just us here, Victoria, you know, on Salt Spring, doesn't feel too shut down because we're all living in the country. We all walk around in the woods all the time anyway. It's the same. But, you know, if you're living in the city and where you go to is a coffee shop and you just can't go there, not quite the same. And in some places, as we know, it's a lot worse off than other places, some of Europe. What do we have in common? We like our homes. I expect this, but I know, you know, the home renovation stores have been doing booming business because everybody's been playing around with their homes, you know, because we're stuck in them. That's been going on with tons of us. The great big trucks still coming here with all building supplies all the time. That's an industry that hasn't been suffering. We care about, I've just got to change my notes here. There we go. Whoops. The natural world we care about. We care about peace and friendliness. It's a bit tricky having a computer to get my notes from. I could maybe have paper in front of me, but I'm not. I've got it on the computer here. Well, I mean, I expect that we all, I'm sure many, many, many people breathed a collective collective sigh of relief when the keys for the American government car went back into the hands of the grown-ups. And that was a very common feeling in the, across the world. I mean, I read about it in the newspapers, which I read. We were all very much part of the anxiety of craziness there. You know, we're all going to be affected by the climate as it goes on. We're so experiencing common experiences. We're so vulnerable to the same vulnerabilities. A disease here, I mean, this infection, doesn't make any difference if we're young or old or clever or smart or educated or healthy or not healthy. We're vulnerable. We're all vulnerable. We're vulnerable to everything, not just COVID. The universal truths that the Buddha taught are absolutely true for all of us. We're all going to get sick sooner or later with something or other. We're all going to get old if we don't get really too sick and die young. We're all going to get old. We've all got to deal with this. We've all got to deal with the failing of our faculties and our abilities, and we're all going to face that we're going to die sooner or later. And the older we get, the more we are facing it. It's, we don't want to, but that's the truth of it. Yeah, the universal truths. Life is a ride through joys and sorrows for all of us, all, and that we aren't in control of it. That's another one. We're not in control. We want to be. We're worried about COVID because it's showing up how we're not in control. How, you know, if our hospitals are overwhelmed, we're not in control of our pain levels. And that's terrifying for us, but actually we're not in control. We are vulnerable. We always were vulnerable. Fragile. We all want well-being. We all affect each other. How we feel affects how other people feel. We forget that too. We get so busy with how I'm feeling that we forget that that's actually a thing that I'm sharing. We're sensitive to each other's energies and we share all that. We forget that. We feel that we're in our little membrane, but we're far more participating than not. We just need to remember that. See what else? Oh, I'm going to quote to you a couple of lines from Amanda Gorman's inaugural poem, and some of you will have seen this and some of you will have been inspired as I was. Just a few of her lines, but boy, she's this 22-year-old beautiful young woman who was asked to read her poem. She's a poet laureate for the youth in the USA at the presidential inauguration. And just a few lines. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first, we must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. I love that line. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. Further on, she says, not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. So inspiring, exactly in this topic. And then I like this too, because we know our inaction and our inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain, if we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy. And change becomes our children's birthright. Beautiful, beautiful language saying the same thing. Put aside our differences. Lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to each other. Beautiful. And so we come back to practice. I want to come back to our practice. Our practice helps us, rather than see the differences, it allows us to see what's shared. When we quieten our minds, instead of thinking and worrying because we're triggered by the challenges of this time or any time, instead of thinking, planning, commenting, we are able to become quiet. When we become quiet, we're able to allow ourselves to feel what we're feeling, even when it's challenging, even when it's painful, we discover we can actually feel it when we're quiet with it, not just feel it and get triggered into a whole big storm, but simply allow it to be here, whatever that may be, sadness, loneliness, frustration. Instead of trying to figure it out and fix it, we can simply wait and see what will happen next. We can find ourselves comfortable with not knowing, instead of always having to try and know and research and listen and read the news all the time. Instead of distracting ourselves by yet another Netflix, of course, we're all doing it to some extent, we can make this simple moment sacred. We can deeply look at what's here instead of what's distracting us or what could be. Instead of repressing difficult feelings, we can welcome them, allow ourselves to be tender, be vulnerable. We can connect with our beautiful earth, all the creatures, all in the same climate. We're all affected by these climatic changes. We can give our love to harmony, to friendship. We can practice compassion. We know how to practice compassion, to not get triggered by the anxiety around the pain or the suffering, but stay quiet, connected. We can make recommitments to being really friendly, to not judging, to being quiet, to asking questions of each other, and that way connecting, rather than thinking thoughts and having opinions about people, boxing people into stories. We can ask, who's there? Please come forth. Yeah, what else do I want to say? I just want to say beauty. Beauty and kindness. Soften that boundary, that membrane. And I think the last thing I want to share is that this is personal, but when I first had a really profound sense of awakening in meditation practice, the experience exactly was one that the membrane that kept me and my life sort of in some kind of contained tube wasn't there. There was nothing separating anything from anything. The truth of that is there always, but the moment of the experience of it was so clear. It was about living life somehow in a tube that kept me separated from all of life. And suddenly, we don't need to be separate. Freedom is not being separate, it's being connected, it's belonging. May we all think of these things and remember our connections. Thank you for listening.